Record 39, The End. All this was like the final grain of salt added to a saturated solution. The crystals, bristling with needles, quickly began to appear, harden and set. It was clear to me that everything had been decided. Tomorrow morning, I would do it. It was the same thing as killing myself, but maybe that's the only way for me to be resurrected, because you can't resurrect something unless it's been killed. In the west, the sky was going through a blue spasm every second. My head was on fire and pounding. I sat up the whole night like this and fell asleep only around 7 in the morning, when the darkness was starting to thin out and turn green, and you could see roofs dotted with birds. I woke up and saw it was already 10 o'clock. No bell this morning, apparently. The glass of water left over from yesterday was still standing on the table. I thirstily drank the water and ran out. I had a lot to do in a hurry as soon as possible. The storm had reamed out the sky, leaving it blue and empty. The shadows had sharp corners all cut out of the blue autumnal air, and were so fragile you were afraid to touch them for fear they'd shatter into glass powder and blow away. It was the same inside me. No thinking. Do not think. Do not think, or else. And I was not thinking, maybe not even seeing, actually, but merely registering. There on the sidewalk, branches from somewhere with green, amber, crimson leaves, overhead birds and arrows rushing about, crossing each other's paths. There, heads, open mouths, hands waving, branches. That must be what is howling, cawing, humming. Then, streets as vacant as if some plague had swept through them. I remember stumbling over something unbearably soft and yielding, though I still couldn't move it. I bent over a corpse. It was lying on its back, legs spread, knees bent, like a woman. The face. I recognised the thick African lips that even now seemed to be laughing juicily. His eyes were squinted shut, and he was laughing right in my face. It took me 1 second to step over him and run on, because I couldn't wait. I had to do everything quickly or else. I felt I'd break. I'd bend out of shape like an overloaded rail. Luckily, I only had some 20 steps to go before I came to the sign with the golden letters, Bureau of Guardians. At the entrance, I stopped, took as big a breath of air as I could and went in. Inside the hallway was an endless line of numbers, some with sheets of paper, some with thick notebooks in their hands. They were slowly moving forward, one step, two steps, then stopping. I ran along this line, my head killing me, pulling at their sleeves, begging them the way a sick man pleads with the doctor to give him something that would end it all with an instant of infinite pain. Some woman wearing a tight belt over her yoni and above the two fat hemispheres of her buttocks, which she kept moving from side to side as if she had eyes in them, snorted at me. "He's got a stomach ache. Take him to the toilet, over yonder, second on the right." I got laughed at. This laughter made something rise up in my throat, and I was just about to start shouting, or... Suddenly someone grabbed my elbow from behind. I turned around, transparent ears like wings, except they weren't pink as usual, but crimson, and his Adam's apple was bobbing up and down as though it might break out of his thin neck. "Why are you here?" he asked, his eyes boring into me. I grabbed hold of him. "Hurry, let's go to your office. Everything, I've got to, right now. I'm glad it's you. Maybe it's terrible that it's you, of all people, but it's good. I'm glad." He also knew her, which was all the more painful for me, but maybe he'd also shudder when he heard, and we could do the killing together, and I wouldn't be all alone for that last second. The door slammed. I remember that some piece of paper got caught under the door and scraped across the floor when the door was closing, and then a sort of special airless silence covered us like a bell jar. If he'd said one word, no matter what, the most meaningless word, I'd have spilled everything right there. But he said nothing. I was too tense all over that my ears were ringing. I said, not looking at him, "I think I always hated her from the very beginning. I was fighting, but no, better you don't believe me. I could have saved myself and didn't want to. I wanted to die. That meant more to me than anything. I mean, not to die, but for her to..." And even now that I know everything, you know, do you know that I was called before the benefactor? Yes, I know. But what he told me, you know, it was like having the floor suddenly jerked out from under you, and you, along with everything on the table there, the paper, the ink splashing out and making spots. Get on with it and hurry, others are waiting. And then I told him the whole... And then I told him the whole breathless, confused story, everything that's written down here about the real me and the shaggy me, and about what she'd said that time about my hands. Yes, that was how it all started, and about how I then didn't want to carry out my duty, and about how I fooled myself, and how she got the phony medical certificates, about how I got more corrupt from one day to the next, and about the corridors down there, and about how on the other side of the wall, all this in innocent lumps and chunks with me out of breath and unable to think of words I needed. The twisted lips with the double bent would smile ironically and pass me the words I wanted, and I would thank him and say, yes, yes. So then, what was going on? So he was doing the talking for me and I was just listening. Yes. And then that's just how it was. Yes. Yes. I felt the skin around my collar getting cold, as if someone had dabbed either on it, and I could hardly bring myself to ask, but how? There's no way you could have. The ironic smile with no words got more bent. Then, you know, you've been trying to hide something from me. Here, you've named over all the ones you happened to see over there on the other side of the wall, but you've forgotten one. You say you didn't. But don't you remember seeing over there just for a second, just in passing, seeing me? That's what I said. Me. A pause. And suddenly it hit me with a shameless clarity, like a bolt of lightning to the head. He was one of them. And everything I'd done, all my pains, everything I'd bought here with my last ounce of strength, my great heroic feat, it was all a joke. It was like the ancient story about Abraham and Isaac. Abraham, in a cold sweat, had already raised the knife over his own son, over his very own self, when suddenly there came a voice from on high. Forget it. I was only joking. Without moving my eyes away from the ironic smile that was getting more and more crooked, I propped my hands against the edge of the table and slowly pushed my chair backward. Then, all of a sudden, I picked myself up in an armful and dashed out of there, past shouts, steps, mouths. How I got downstairs to one of the public washrooms in the subway station, I do not remember. Up there above, everything was in ruins. The greatest and most rational civilization in all history had collapsed. But down here, someone had the ironic notion of keeping everything as it was, in splendid shape. And to think that all this was doomed, that it would all be grown over in grass, and that nothing would be left of all this but myths, I groaned out loud. At the same moment, I felt a consoling touch on my shoulder. It was my neighbour, who was in the seat to my left. His forehead was huge, His forehead was a huge parabola, written over by the yellow, indecipherable lines of his wrinkles, and these lines were about me. "I understand you. I understand you completely," he said. "But still, calm down. Don't carry on so. This'll all come back. It'll all come back, no question. The only thing that matters is that everyone should hear about my discovery. You're the first one I'm telling. I've calculated that infinity does not exist." I gave him a wild look. "Yes, it's true, what I'm telling you. There is no infinity. If the world were infinite, then the average density of matter in it would equal zero. But since it is not zero, this we know, it follows that the universe is finite. It is spherical in shape, and the square of its radius, y squared, is equal to the average density times the..." I've just got to calculate the numerical coefficients, and then, you see, everything is done, everything is simple, everything is calculable, and then we'll win philosophically, don't you see? "But you, sir, are preventing me from finishing this calculation. You're shouting." What shook me more, I don't know, his discovery or his firmness in his apocalyptic hour. In his hands, I hadn't seen this until now, he held a notebook and a logarithmic dial, and understood that even if everything was going to perish, my duty before you, my unknown readers, was to leave my records in finished form. I asked him for some paper, and on it I wrote down these final lines. I wanted to put a period, the way the ancients would set a cross over the pits where they piled their dead, but suddenly the pencil jerked and fell out my hand. "Listen," I grabbed my neighbour, "listen to me. I tell you, you have to tell me this. There, where your finite universe ends, that's there. Beyond?" He didn't have time to answer. From overhead, on the steps, the pounding of feet. Record 40. Facts. The bell. I am certain. It is day, clear. Barometer at 760. Could it be that I, D-503, actually wrote these 225 pages? Could it be that I ever actually felt this or imagined that I did? It's my handwriting, and it goes on in the same hand, but fortunately only the handwriting is the same. No delirium, no ridiculous metaphors, no feelings, just the facts, because I'm well. I am completely, absolutely well. I'm smiling. I can't help smiling. They extracted a kind of splinter from my head, and now my head is easy and empty. Or should I say, not empty, but there's nothing strange there that keeps me from smiling. A smile is the normal state of a normal person. The facts are as follows. That evening, they seized my neighbour, the one who'd discovered that the universe is finite, and me, and everybody who'd been with us, and charged us with not having the certificate of the operation, and took us off to the nearest auditorium, the number of which is 112, was familiar for some reason. Here, we were strapped to the tables and put through the great operation. The following day, I, D-503, reported to the benefactor and told him all I knew about the enemies of happiness. Why could this have seemed hard for me before? I don't understand. Only one explanation. My former illness. Soul. That same evening, at one and the same table, with him, the benefactor, I was sitting for the first time in the famous gas room. They brought in that woman. She was supposed to give her testimony in my presence. The woman was stubbornly silent and kept smiling. I noticed that she had sharp, very white teeth and that this was beautiful. Then they put her under the bell. Her face got very white, and since she had eyes that were dark and big, this was very beautiful. When they started pumping the air out of the bell, she threw her head back and half closed her eyes and pressed her lips together, and this reminded me of something. She was looking at me, holding on tight to the arms of the chair until her eyes closed completely. Then they pulled her out, quickly brought her to with the help of electrodes, and put her back under the bell. This happened 3 times, and she still didn't say a word. Others that were brought in with that woman turned out to be more honest. Most of them began talking right after the first time. Tomorrow, they'll all go up the steps of the machine of the benefactor. It can't be put off, because in the Western Quarters, there is still chaos, roaring, corpses, animals, and unfortunately, quite a lot of numbers who have betrayed reason. But on 40th Avenue, which runs cross town, they've managed to build a temporary wall of high voltage waves, and I hope we'll win. More, I'm certain we'll win, because reason has to win.